From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. And as you can probably tell from the noise in the background, we're not in our usual studio confines at WUOT. I've left the studio to come here to Knoxville Center Mall to open this month's edition of the program for a very special reason. This mall is a lot like any mall you've ever been in. There's a food court to my left, about a football field away or so. There's a Spencer's Gifts. There's a collectibles store. I see a shoe store right over there. If I turn to my right, there's the JCPenney and the Payless. But right in the middle, right ahead of me at the 12 o'clock position, is something you'd never expect to see in a shopping mall. At least I wouldn't. It's a solar energy exhibit called Spectrum, Tennessee's Solar Connection. And it's operated in part by the University of Tennessee. Well, naturally, I got a little curious as to why there's a solar museum in the middle of a shopping mall. Let's go find out. We're going to speak with John Hopkins. He's the guy who helps manage this exhibit for the University of Tennessee. And here he is right now. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we're standing here in the middle of this solar exhibit. I've come out of the hallway here. Tell us a little bit about Spectrum and what it does.
So Spectrum is the University of Tennessee's free solar energy exhibit. It's located here at the Knoxville Center Mall with activities for visitors of all ages to learn about solar energy in Tennessee. You know, it's designed to engage K-12 students and the public in Tennessee's cutting-edge solar and renewable energy industry and serve as a STEM education resource for teachers and youth organizations.
Okay. And you say you've been open here for about a year at this point. Is that right? Or a year and a half?
About a year and a half. The exhibit was constructed for installation and service at the West Tennessee Solar Farm in Haywood County, right off of Interstate 40 in West Tennessee. The Welcome and Information Center that is planned for that site and the permanent location for Spectrum, permanent home, is still under construction. And for the next 2 years, while that's under construction, Spectrum will be here at the Knoxville Center Mall to serve the public.
In the meantime, it is here at the mall, which is kind of an incongruous place for an exhibit about solar energy. So why locate it here at the mall?
Really to provide more opportunity to engage in the programs. And actually, we're kind of lucky to find a location that was capable of hosting the exhibits, and we took advantage of that.
All right, well, John, if you want to, why don't we take a little walk around here and you tell me what some of these exhibits are about and what you guys hope to accomplish by having them here.
Right, so we have several different activity areas around the central part of the exhibits. You see we have an inside area that is the primary Spectrum exhibit itself that has information that kind of spans the history of energy, solar energy, and provides you a lot of information with regards to the solar value chain and how it fits into everyday life. We have some hands-on exhibits and different displays that kind of give you an idea of how solar energy could fit into an everyday life.
And I can imagine that for, you know, a field trip, that's a planned activity. Teachers want to bring their students out and see what's going on over here. But if you're like me and just somebody who was looking for a pair of socks and then run across a solar exhibit, what kind of reaction do you get from the people who didn't know this was here?
It's surprising, I think, quite a bit in terms of, wow, I never knew this was here. I think we get quite a bit of referral traffic, from the unplanned visits, and I think it's been very positive from that perspective as well.
John Hopkins is the director of the University of Tennessee's National Science Foundation-funded program 10SCORE, which helps operate the Spectrum Solar Energy exhibit right now at the Knoxville Center Mall. John, thanks so much for taking the time to walk me through this exhibit.
Okay, thank you very much.
The National Institute for Mathematical and Biological Synthesis, Young Williams Animal Center, and the University of Tennessee College of Veterinary Medicine recently wrapped up a study of feral cat colonies. The study yielded some new information about how to measure and decrease those feral cat populations. Theresa Fisher is program director of the Companion Animal Initiative of Tennessee, which is based at the Veterinary College. She spoke with WUOT's Chrissy Kuiper about the study and about the effectiveness of its Trap, Neuter, and Return program.
We wanted to get a formula that would tell us how many spays and neuters you need to do in a specific colony. So what we did was we looked at all the data that we had. We take in feral cats and we spay and neuter them, and then the caretakers put them back where they found them. We add in factors such as we only looked at the females, and we add in factors for like strays or people dumping their cats. amount of kittens being born a year, amount of kittens that die every year. So we put that into a formula, and it was literally about a 7-page mathematical formula. And it told us that we need to at least target 60% of a colony each year in order to see a decline in that colony overall.
In just the females of the colony?
Yes. Okay. Targeting how many we would have to spay in order to get a decline in the population. We would like zero population growth, and then we would like to eradicate the colony. But a lot of factors go into that as well, big one being humans.
What's the average size of a colony?
So we define a colony as it can even be 2 cats at a feeding station or up to 30 to 50 cats. It just depends. Our caretakers will feed a specific colony at a specific place every day.
Do you have any idea how many colonies we're looking at just in Knox County?
When we did this study, we took a survey of all of the caretakers we've been working with, and we estimated at over 400 colonies just in Knox County. And they multiply fast. I mean, every 62 days, you could have a new litter of babies. So people just don't realize how fast they multiply. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand their reproductive systems. They don't understand that brothers and sisters can mate.
When I was little, I remember hearing this conversation among neighbors. They were going to have their male cats fixed, but they weren't going to have their female cats fixed because it was such an invasive procedure. And it was much more expensive than male neutering at the time. Has the surgery itself gotten easier?
Oh, yes. Today, we spay and neuter as early as 2 pounds. It used to be that you would hear you can't spay or neuter your pets until they are 6 months old. They get pregnant at 5 months old. So we don't wait till they're pregnant or till they've had their first litter anymore. We do it as early as 2 pounds. Some of our expert surgeons can do it at 1.5 pounds. And there are a lot of new techniques coming out of Humane Alliance down in Asheville, North Carolina. They have set up clone spay-neuter clinics across the United States and actually internationally. And all they do every day is spay and neuter. So they have mastered these techniques in cats and dogs. The anesthetic protocols have changed. It's not as hard on the animals as it used to be because of the anesthesia.
So are you actually seeing declines in numbers?
Yes. We manage the colonies with the caretakers. So once they go in and trap, neuter, and return, they also manage the colony. So they're still going back every day. They're making sure everybody's healthy. The ones who are not healthy, they trap and take to a veterinarian for care. If they're sick and need to be euthanized, they take care of that. Any new kittens that are dumped in there, they get the kittens out, make sure that they're getting spayed or neutered. Everyone wants to see these numbers decreasing. You know, there's various opinions on feral cats, but the same goal every one of them has, and that's reducing these numbers.
That does it for this edition of The Method. A reminder, you can always listen to our previous installments online at WUOT.org. Until next time, I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.